Welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about resistant insects, specifically BT-resistant rootworms. So if you've got that issue on your farm, you're going to love this show. But also, even if you don't have that issue, we've got a lot of other things we're going to cover today. And we'd also love to take your phone call. If you'd like to call in, our number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. We are happy to talk about anything that's going on in your farm or answer any agronomic questions you might have. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. Darren, I think we're going to want to get to the AgPhD mailbag just about right away here today. Before we do...
What? You don't think we'll have enough to talk about with rootworms?
Oh, well, we have lots, but we have an entire show. I just see an enormous pile of questions over there, so I was thinking maybe we should start covering those right away. But anyway, before we do, just giving you a little update on the whole coronavirus thing, I know we've gotten a lot of questions from farmers wondering about supply. Fortunately, supplies are great in terms of seed, crop protection products, and even fertilizer. So going into the spring, I'm not too worried that we're going to see a major disruption in production agriculture, at least in the United States. But I really would encourage you, get your product now. Get whatever you need to get through the spring as quickly as you can. That way you've got it on hand and your worries are pretty much done. I mean, have everything you need. And that's what we're doing in our farm. Hopefully we'll be able to plant starting next week. In terms of corn, our first plant date is April 10th in terms of crop insurance. We're huge believers in planting early. Planting even into cold soils works phenomenally well if you just follow a few simple tips. So we'd really encourage you, especially coming off of a couple years in a row where planting has gotten delayed, let's get the seed in the ground. If the soil's fit, let's get her in the ground. And you can only get it in the ground if you have it on hand on your farm. So we just encourage you, get your products as soon as you can. All right, well, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, our first question today comes from Kevin in Illinois. Again, if you have a question for us, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. Kevin asks about sulfur and nitrogen. He said, I've heard you talk in the past about broadcasting sulfur and nitrogen, and you should have a ratio of about 1 pound of sulfur to each 10 pounds of nitrogen. I'm wondering if your opinion has changed, if you've had more experience and are now using any more sulfur than that 10-to-1 ratio.
Well, let's just look real quick on the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. I'm pulling it up as we speak here. So this is a free app that you can download for your smartphone or your tablet. Anyway, if I look at, let's call it 300 bushel corn, that's 336 pounds of nitrogen and 45 pounds of sulfur. So right away, you would say, well, according to that, every pound of nitrogen I put on, I should be putting on roughly, let's call it a little over a tenth. So let me rephrase this so it's bigger numbers. For every 100 pounds of nitrogen I put on, I should be putting on something like 12 pounds or 13 pounds of sulfur. Here's the reason why that's not maybe necessary. Sulfate only leaches at about half the rate of nitrate. So usually we don't see as much loss on the sulfate portion as what we do in the nitrogen portion. But as I say that, I don't really know what you have for carryover nitrogen. I don't know what you have for soil organic matter and how much nitrogen is going to get released out of that. So there are many things that I don't know that you do as the farmer. So you can do whatever you want, but yeah, I would still say it's something around there. It's not exact, but that'll get you relatively close. For every 10 pounds of nitrogen you put out, you should probably be applying a pound of sulfur.
All right. Thanks for the question, Kevin. Got another ratio question, Brian. This one comes from Ryan, and I believe he's in Nebraska. Ryan said, we've been working on getting our soils to a 10-to-1 ratio of phosphorus to zinc in parts per million.
Yep.
The question I have is, once we've achieved this with our soils and we're not going to be fertilizing, we'd like to use that same ratio so we could keep that 10-to-1 in our soil. Now, if we're applying MAP and a zinc sulfate blend, Should the 10-to-1 ratio be of phosphate, or should that be converted to actual P? 50 pounds of phosphate to 5 pounds of zinc, or 50 pounds of actual P to 5 pounds of zinc?
Okay. So this is a great question, and we've been working on proving that ratio thing out, for example, on our farm the last few years. The last couple of years, we have taken each one of our individual grid points, and we've been doing one-acre grids. We farm about 3,000 acres, and each of the last couple of years, we have soil tested over 2,000 acres of the 3,000. So we each of the last 2 years have had over 2,000 grid points on corn and bean ground, and we have been looking at that ratio. And where do the best yields come from? Where do the worst yields come from? It's really led us to this point where it's an 8-to-1, 10-to-1 kind of ratio. If we get it down to, let's say, 2-to-1, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, we lose yield. If it's way up at 20-to-1, 30-to-1, we're losing yield. And what we're looking at typically here is either the Olson phosphorus test or the Weak Bray P1 phosphorus test. And I'm talking phosphorus, not phosphate, phosphorus versus zinc. So that's what we have been determining in our farm. And I would encourage you to look at the same stuff. In other words, take all your soil test grid points, look at the yield from each of those points, map that all out, or just put that into a spreadsheet and have Excel just do a simple chart for you. It's super easy. I mean, you could literally do this in an hour probably. And now you have real data from your farm to know kind of where you're going. Anyway, here's what I wanted to tell you. When we look at what is the phosphate removal versus the zinc removal for, let's call it 300 bushel corn, it's 153 pounds of phosphate to 0.77 pounds of zinc. So is that a 10-to-1 ratio? No, that's not even close to a 10-to-1 ratio. So my point is, once you get it to this 10-to-1 ratio, you're going to be putting on way more phosphorus, probably even maybe 100-to-1 ratio of phosphate to zinc moving forward, just because your crop is not removing nearly as much zinc as it is phosphorus. All right, well, stay tuned. We'll talk about BT-resistant rootworms right after this.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Lots going on. We're going to talk about rootworms a little bit in corn. Certainly, there's a lot of stuff happening with corn right now. Getting fertilizer in place is one of those things. We've got Dave Furbeck on with us right now with AgriLiquid. Dave, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. You guys staying safe there up in Michigan?
Very much so. Very much so. We've done a lot of things. It is a we've got a lot of people working from home right now, but so it's a very empty office right now.
Well, that's the question. We've had a lot of farmers talk about, man, how is this going to be impacting our supply and getting fertilizer in place on time and getting seed in place on time. So that's why I wanted to talk to you today. What's happening in terms of the supply chain for agriculture?
And that's a great question, Darren. Every year it seems like there's some type of a supply shock or supply situation caused by weather or rail or something like this. This year we've got a pandemic to add a little bit of extra complication to it. But we're working really closely at AgroLiquid with our suppliers, with our vendors, our trucking companies that deliver for us, and we're working very closely with them right now. What we're getting back, what information we're getting back from them is right now it's business as usual. No ordering, supplier delivery interruptions or challenges, and we're just all monitoring the news and the various press releases coming from the federal, state, and local governments very, very closely. But right now we're very excited and optimistic about the 2020 growing season, and no supply interruptions at this time.
For your people out in the field and sales reps in different areas, I'm sure each state has its own challenges. Right now, what's your strategy and how are you servicing customers?
And for the most part, again, great question. Really, for us, what we want our grower customers and retail partners to see is really no change from our level of service, how we get product out, how we get it to customers. A lot of what we're doing is hopefully behind the scenes for our customers. We've done a lot of changes with how we work, working remotely, changing some processes, doing some things that limit maybe some personal interaction in the workforce. Something that our growers and retail partners might see is maybe some different guidelines with our drivers, maintaining a little more social separation when we're delivering, doing some things like that maintain our ability to supply product, but they also maintain our customers and our employees' health and safety. And so, that hopefully the majority of things that we're doing and putting in place are behind the scenes, and our customers shouldn't see it. Another thing, a lot of companies are doing, including AgroLiquid, our sales account managers and agronomists really spend a lot of time in front of the grower. Just now they're doing it digitally or virtually using things like WebEx, Zoom, and other webinar type tools to get in front of growers and give them the insight and information that they need to make decisions. So hopefully it's really not changing what we do, but how we do it, yes, we are changing how we do our work pretty effectively.
Yeah, I talked to a couple members of your research team here. In fact, we just had Dr. Jerry Willem on yesterday on the program, I believe. And Jerry was just chomping at the bit to get back out in the field. And he said, man, I'm going to be out in a tractor or out digging around in the dirt and looking at new products and exciting new things. And he said, that's a lot more fun than watching the news these days.
It really is. And that's the great thing about agriculture. I mean, the world knows that we are a vital and essential industry. And the great thing about agriculture is it is the epitome, farming is the epitome of social distancing. So you can get out and you can get in your tractor or get in the truck and be away from things for a bit. But, we've still got the same job we've got to get done. We've got a lot of acres of corn and soybeans and a lot of specialty crops that have to be planted. And they're still going to need the nutrients and the crop protection products that they're going to require. And so we've got the same amount of work in front of us. We've just got to change how we're doing it.
Yeah, I've certainly seen a lot of trucks out on the road moving product, getting things in place. Where we're at in the north, we're actually supposed to maybe catch a little snow tonight here, so maybe that'll hold up our planting. But the guys in the south have got some good crop coming already, and I'm sure a lot of those in-season applications are already underway.
we've seen a lot of product moving out, and I'm sure that, you know, through this, growers are, growers are very familiar with, you know, some of the things, some of the challenges or supply shocks that the weather can bring. And I'm sure, you know, we've seen a lot of shipping activity in the last few weeks with people trying to get in front of the weather and get in front of this pandemic and making sure that if something unexpected happens later on, at least they've got their product in hand. Because, growing up on a farm, you know, that was always, you know, the best insurance was, you know, if you've got your stuff on farm and in your hands, then you can really kind of get through a lot then at that point. So, but we've seen a lot of activity to your point.
Dave, I've talked to a number of other suppliers about just how difficult it's been getting product into the country. I know there was one seed supplier was bringing some seed back from South America. They said, the port of entry had somebody that tested positive for COVID-19, and all of a sudden it shut everything down for a couple of weeks there. You've got your plants in the United States. I would assume that's a big advantage this year.
Sure, and that's why I think one of the advantages that we have as a company, we tend to have several smaller plants located closer to the market rather than one big plant located in Canada or somewhere else. Our plants tend to be located in the markets that they service, and that helps us out in a situation like this. It does, you know, offer some complications. We've got good partners and grower customers in Canada and Mexico and even Hawaii that, some of these border issues have started to creep up. We've been, you know, we're working very closely with them to make sure we know what they need, what products they need and when they're going to need them, and trying to get those products in place just in case something we're not expecting happens, and like say if the border were to shut down or something like that. So we're trying to be very ahead of the curve when situations like that might come up. But I do think we're in as good a shape as where we can be right now going into the season. We've got good stockpiles of product. We've got good service from all of our trucking companies and vendors and suppliers that supply us. I think we're in as good a shape as we can be right now, for the season that's just about ready to start tipping off, at least in the South anyways.
Hey, Dave, we've got about 1 minute left, and I was just thinking a lot of our listeners have not had a chance to be at a fertilizer manufacturing plant before. In a liquid fertilizer manufacturing process, is it something where you're able to keep running? You don't need a huge number of people in the plant?
It really depends on the product and on the strategy for the plant. But for us, that's exactly the strategy we pursue. We don't tend to have one massive plant with a lot of people at it in a centralized location. We tend to do our production out in the markets, and that what we tend to have then are several smaller plants that can be run very efficiently. Not a lot of people on staff, and that, quite frankly, in a situation like that, that helps us manage some risk and also helps us protect our employees and our customers by, we can limit how many folks are coming in and out of the office then, and making sure we're keeping exposures or anything like that very, very manageable. So that's definitely something that's important to us. And as I said, I think we're in as good a situation as we can be in, heading into the season, and especially with the conditions that we've got right now.
That's great to hear. Still producing, still delivering fertilizer, no disruptions to the market at a really critical time here. Dave Furbeck talking with us right now from AgriLiquid. Dave, thank you so much. Stay safe and have a great spring. We'll be right back talking about resistant rootworms after this. Stay tuned.
The corn we planted early February have all good emergence. So far, we can't find any condition that the wheels haven't worked. I can just say that.
Closing the seed trench behind the planter is essential to establishing yields in the fall. Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer who is tired of seeing poor stands because of uneven emergence, the Germinator is here to give your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. For more information, visit us at farmshopmfg.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for heads-up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Just get an update on what's happening in the fertilizer industry. Sounds like supplies are moving around well. Doesn't sound like any huge disruptions there, at least at this point, which is great news as planting season is either well underway on your farm or just right around the corner. One thing that you do need to consider, especially if you're putting corn in the ground, is controlling rootworms, because we're seeing a growing number of BT-resistant rootworms out there, and we certainly need to address that before that population gets out of control. We've got Rich Porter with us right now with AMVAC. He operates out of the state of Iowa. Rich, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
We are doing quite well. You know, we think about this rootworm thing, and a lot of growers have said, well, I'm just going to go use a trait, and the traits have been really good. They really have. They've been awesome. They've been very helpful, but we've got some rootworms that are resistant to those traits, and dealing with them with some of the hard chemistry options that we have certainly been positive yield-wise. What are you seeing out there, Rich? Are you seeing more of these resistant rootworms? Is that population changing or moving at all in our country?
Well, as far as BT-resistant corn rootworms, you know, it's not something I track really closely, but what I can say is that we know that that regarding the major BT events out there, the trait packages, we have resistance to four of those BT proteins. So that is documented. Now, that is not to say that certainly – just like any resistant, it doesn't occur in every field and every farm, but it's something we have to keep a close watch on, because it's once it's present, it typically will not go away.
All right, so the question that we get from a lot of our listeners is, all right, what are my best options if I'm going to use chemistry to deal with rootworms. Can I feel pretty confident in performance with that? And are there a number of choices? Because some of these growers have gone away from using insecticide on their farms and are just getting back into it.
Yes, we've been hearing that trend. So if a grower chooses to use a conventional or non-BT, non-below ground BT trait, then we have many options, and we have proven options in the granular soil insecticides and liquids. And I think you're familiar with what AMVAC offers in those areas.
One other thing too, Rich, is just delivery options. I was just talking with an agronomist yesterday, and he was chatting with one of his growers talking about smart stacks and what he smart boxes and what he was doing on his planter. Can you talk about that a little bit? If a grower is interested in getting set up, what's the process that you go through and what kind of choices does he have once he has that system?
Okay, sure. Be glad to. So, as far as smart box options, the first contact would be the retailer, and the retailer can then contact us, and we will put the grower in touch with the appropriate person. We have a vendor called World Class Industries, so we will complete that loop for the grower to get them connected, and then the various programs around the smart box equipment can be looked at, and we offer several options there. Then when that decision's made, next would be the product decision, and then we would have four options. There would be and different formulations of those, but Aztec HC and 467G is both available in SmartBox. Smart Choice, the HC formulation is now available, and Counter 20G, and also Force 10G. So those are four options there.
Yeah, you mentioned the HC options, and you're talking about higher concentrations. I've heard a lot of growers talking about this. They're excited about, wow, I don't have to fill up as often, and that's really, really nice. The other thing is just the importance of being calibrated, and there's still time this spring to get that done if you haven't already. I know for our farm, that's one of the most important things as we look at this. We want to make sure we're putting on the right rate of the right product. You mentioned lots of different choices there, Rich. Where do you start with growers on rootworm control, and what options have you found have worked the best?
So a very good question. The first question would be, are we in long-term continuous corn? If we're in that situation where nematodes can come into play, then Counter is a very good choice because it controls not only corn rootworm, but also the major corn nematodes. So that's one discussion we'd want to have. What is the continuous corn look like? If it's, if it's a rotation of maybe 2 years corn and then to soybeans, Aztec would be a great choice. And the HC formulation, as you said, it covers a lot more acres, and Smart Choice would be a great option there too. And the difference with Smart Choice would be narrow row corn. So if we're looking at 20 inch row spacing, for example, Smart Choice fits that acre very, very well because you can use full rates of the product. So it's really designed on that row spacing. And then lastly, Force 10G, again, a newcomer in the higher load formulations, but that's certainly a proven insecticide for rootworm.
You mentioned that extra consideration of nematodes with Counter. I was thinking about this too. We've got a lot of growers using cover crops, and in many cases from 2019, it may be the first time they've done it, or they may have used a different blend of cover crops or gotten a lot more growth for a lot more months out in the field. There's a lot of secondary insects. I've already heard some growers talking about grubs and army worms and cutworms. A lot of concerns coming out of some of those cover crops. crops with insects. What have you seen, and what kind of level of secondary insect control is there by using an insecticide at planting time?
The question on that is very, very well timed. The secondary, I've moved towards seed and seedling pests. They are certainly not as important as rootworm or economically important, but they can be very damaging on a local basis. So with white grub, with seed corn maggot, with wireworms, every one of the products that I just mentioned will work very, very well on those. It would be hard to separate those out. So there, again, I would look at full rates under high pressure situations, because those seedling pests can be extremely damaging when they're present.
Absolutely. We're talking with Rich Porter with AMVAC. Rich, thank you so much. Really appreciate you being generous with your time. Thanks for all the information today, and good luck heading into the spring.
Thank you. Have a good spring and safe one.
Yeah, safe being the key factor there. And Brian, you know, we were talking about smart boxes. That's one of the reasons they got popular, is just the safety factor of a closed handling system. When we think about using insecticides for control of rootworms, that's a real positive benefit.
It is. Now, fortunately, most of the insecticides that are on the market today are actually much safer than the ones we used to have. I think about when I was growing up, it was Thimet, Diphenate. And Counter is still out there, but with Counter, yeah, you're going to have a box. So it just makes it a lot better, a lot safer. Talking about this whole BT-resistant rootworm thing, though, it just makes me think back. The first case that we know of in the entire United States was found in the exact same section of land that we're doing the radio show from today, right on our home farm. Just the neighbor to the north started to have this issue. This is about 10 years ago. And it took 3 years for the USDA and South Dakota State University to officially confirm it and put it out there in the public. 3 years! And we knew it in advance. But they had to grow them out and then grow out the offspring, then grow out the offspring, just to prove, oh, it truly is a resistant rootworm. So with the BT, we very often think, oh, that's going to kill all the bugs. Well, there are some that have developed resistance, just like we see weed resistance, just like we see resistance to certain fungicides. So be thinking about that a little bit. That's why we like having the insecticide plus the BT. It's a sure way to get the insects. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Avoid dry run failures with the new Hypro Force Field Pump. Providing the ultimate protection, this wet seal pump will save you on costly in-season downtime to keep your sprayer running. Now all you have to worry about is the weather. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio today. If you'd like to call into the show, it's 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. So we were talking just a little bit about resistant rootworms to the BT traits, but just talking about insects that are resistant to insecticides, and I would consider this BT an insecticide as well. There obviously is more of that all the time. And, you know, when you stop and think about it, with herbicides, it's very common now to use 3 to 5 modes of action on every acre. I know on our own farm, when we talk soybeans or corn, that's kind of where we're at. A minimum of 3 different modes of action, and usually we're talking 5. And by modes of action, I don't just mean modes of action. I mean effective modes of action, modes of action that will actually work on the target pest. When we go to fungicides, very common now to have 2 or 3 different fungicides. I think like seed treatment, for example, usually we're talking 4 fungicides, and you might find at least 2 or 3 are effective on every single disease or an individual disease. So my point here is, okay, we're doing a pretty good job preventing resistance on the herbicide end or on the weed end, on the disease end. What are we doing on insects? What are we doing on insecticides? So, yep, now there are, in a lot of cases, 2 different modes of action, we'll call it, 2 different BTs that you're going to find for corn borer or maybe for rootworms. And that's nice, but that's still only 2. And in some cases, okay, the rootworms might be resistant to one of those BTs, so you only have 1 effective mode of action left. Well, if all you're doing is that, and you're counting on that to stop your issue, I don't know. I'm not super comfortable with that. So in our own operation, we do use insecticide on every acre of corn we plant every single year. I don't care if it's continuous corn, soybean ground, wheat ground, whatever it is. Now, I'm not saying we'll use a full rate. I'm not saying we're spending $25 an acre or anything like that, but I'm at least going to spend 3. I'm at least going to spend 3. Why wouldn't I? As cheap as that is, if I can get another mode of action out there, plus my BTs, okay, now I'm feeling much, much, much better. So kind of how that, I was telling you a little earlier, it was in our same section here where that first BT resistance got discovered about 10 years ago. On rootworms, corn had fallen over, 2 different varieties. And so right away, as an agronomist, I said, well, he probably didn't have rootworm-resistant BT out there. He probably just put the wrong bag in the field, or the company gave him the wrong stuff. No, that wasn't the case. It truly was resistant. But anyway, we had corn, and it was continuous corn, just kitty corn across the road. We didn't have any issue. Well, why didn't we have any issue? Because we were using insecticide also. We were using the exact same trait, exact same traits. One trait. It was 1 BT trait. This was 10 years ago. We didn't have stack then. But anyway, we were using the same trait. We didn't have the problem he did. The only difference was we were using insecticide, he wasn't. So we just always encourage you, be thinking about resistance. Even if it's something like this, and even if it's something where you're getting some great sales pitch from the company saying, well, you'll eliminate all your bugs or you'll eliminate all this or that, it's just not super wise usually to go out with 1 mode of action on any pest you are after. When you do that, you're going to have resistance. I don't care what it is, bugs, diseases, weeds, nematodes, there is going to be resistance. All right, so our suggestion for you is we would encourage you use multiple BTs. So if you've got a major rootworm problem, we usually suggest smart stacks, for example. So you get two different BT rootworm traits and two different corn borer BT traits, but then also use some insecticide. So that way, anything that gets past your BT, you can control it with insecticide. Because it's the same thing we talk about with weeds and weed resistance. You know what? A dead weed can't become a resistant weed. Well, a dead bug can't become a resistant bug. We've got to control that population that does have some level of tolerance or even resistance to the BTs. We don't want them out in the population and spreading. So let's get them under control one way or the other. All right, let's jump back into the Ag PhD mailbag. Darren, what you got next?
All right, we were talking about saturated cold germination tests on corn, and Jeff asked the question. He said, how long does it take to do one of these tests, and could I possibly do it at home? Our seed normally doesn't come until within a couple of weeks before planting at the earliest. You know what? That's a pretty tight little time frame, Jeff. And a lot of times just for a standard germination score, it takes a week.
Yep.
For a saturated cold test, oftentimes it takes a week and a half or 2 weeks to get that back. So you're going to be cutting it pretty close.
You are. And yes, you can try this stuff on your own at home. But one of the things that they'll teach you, and so for Ag PhD, we've had our own testing lab, not doing saturated cold germ tests, but doing germination and cold germination tests for over 20 years. So I've had to learn all that stuff. And I can just tell you, like day one, I said, oh, yeah, all these plants grew. It's all fine. And we're 100%. And they go, no, you dummy. It's not 100%. Look at this one here. It's a little... It's not formed correctly. This one doesn't have that same level of growth. This one really struggled. We're going to count all those as nope, didn't pass. So the point is, yep, that'll get you pretty close. So doing it at home, a lot better than nothing, definitely. But if you see some plants that are weak, there, it's very common, and there's a cutoff point there, and it's a little bit of judgment call. But I'm just trying to say, just because it comes out doesn't mean it's going to pass. And especially when you get out in the real world and on a big scale, a lot of times when they're giving you the seed test results, they're erring on the cautious side, and anything that isn't just about perfect, it doesn't pass.
All right, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Got one here from Gordon and Sue, and they were talking and just wondering, how did Hefties ever get connected with Neil Kinsey? Just wondering if there's an interesting backstory.
That's a great question. I don't really know. Darren, do you know?
I think we were just reading Neil's stuff and looking at...
I think so, too.
Yeah,
looking at what Neil was up to. And I don't remember who said read Neil's stuff. That's a great question. But all I know is, yeah, I read Neil's book, Darren did as well. And we both were just obviously extremely impressed. And a lot of the things that we had learned in over 20 years being agronomists, it's like, yep, what he's saying there is dead on. We've seen that too. Yep, we agree with that. Oh, hey, here's something that we didn't know. We always wondered, why is this way? And then he explained it and you go, yep. That totally makes sense. And so almost everything that he had in his book, there's only one thing I can think of, and that's potassium and high pH soils that I would disagree with Neil on. But almost everything else, it was just spot on with what we normally talk about, and then even answered a few more questions above and beyond that. So that's pretty much where it started, and then we just contacted Neil, and I think both Darren and I were interested in potentially going to one of his classes he puts on, and we just thought, you know, how about if we just have Neil come to us, because I know we'd have a whole bunch of other farmers and agronomists who'd be interested in our region. So we started doing some stuff on a smaller scale, and now, like this year, I don't even know what we had, 500-600 farmers and agronomists at the event we had at the Morton Center, and we're planning to do that again next year. That information will be on our website at agphd.com. We're going to do that in late February next year and have him back. So he is quite the guy, And I will just say, too, like for his normal seminars, it'll be a little different what we're going to do next year, because both Darren and I are going to be pretty heavily involved in that, asking a lot of questions of Neil, talking through not just, okay, here's kind of the science behind this and the backstory and this and everything else. We'll get even more into economics. We'll get more into reading specific soil tests, comparing his tests to some of the other labs that are out there, especially Midwest Labs, who we use quite commonly. So it should be a lot of fun, and that information will be on our website at agphd.com.
All right, thanks for those questions so far. We're going to get into some more of your questions as the Ag PhD mailbag will continue right after this short break. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, and if you have an agronomic question for us, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Wherever you go, whatever you're doing, whenever you want, farm your way with Case IH AFS Connect. Now you can farm, share data, and manage your fleet however, whenever, and wherever you want. Learn more at caseih.com/farmyourway.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by AMVAC Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. If you'd like to call into the show, got a little bit of time left, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's what Dell from Michigan did. Hey, Dell, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
You bet. Here you got some rootworm questions for us.
I do. At what stage of the corn is the rootworm a problem? Where is the problem at? How do you see a corn stalk and know that it's the rootworm that's causing it? And what does the corn stalk look like with rootworm? Does it fall over because it ate off all its roots? Help me out here.
Okay. So just to give you some background on this, and for all of our listeners, yeah, I apologize. We didn't talk through the life cycle of this rootworm. But what ends up happening is they will hatch based on the number of heat units that you have in the spring. So in our area, we farm in southeast South Dakota, basically right where Minnesota, Iowa, and South Dakota all meet. We're about 20, 30 miles inside the border in South Dakota, right north of Sioux Falls. Around here, we usually figure that the rootworms are going to hatch in about, let's call it late May in a normal year. Then they'll typically feed on the plant roots for roughly a month, maybe a month and a half. Then they're going to pupate, and then later in the summer, they're going to become rootworm beetles. So that's the adult stage is the beetle. The beetles mate, they lay eggs, and then those hatch again the next year. So that's basically the life cycle. When you typically see the adults is right around tasseling time, and so somebody could certainly spray then, and if you spray early enough before they've mated and laid eggs, well, that means you're going to have fewer rootworms because they didn't get the opportunity to lay the eggs for the next year. Where they feed is, obviously, they're called rootworms, so they're feeding on roots, and they're going to feed in that time span, like I was talking about, a 30 to 45-day window usually. And for us, like I was saying, it's late May to late June, maybe into early July. So what happens quite often is we get phone calls in the middle of the summer or at harvest. And guys say, hey, I've had lodging problems. I got rootworms out here. Well, you're way too late now. There's nothing you could do. And by the way, there's no rescue treatment for rootworms. Now, back in the old days, 25, 30 years ago, we used to use liquid Furadan, put the Furadan out there, hope for 3 to 5 inches of rain, and then it might get down into the root zone enough that we could get, call it 50 to 75% control. But Furadan's off the market today. Lorsban, you could try that, but you won't get as good a control. So your best bet is to use a BT product, a BT corn, or use some insecticide at planting time. But a lot of times we're planting around here in mid-April. Well, the rootworms don't even show up till mid-May. So it's possible if you had tremendously huge amounts of rain that you could lose some of that insecticide if you're using an insecticide. So by the time the rootworms hatch, you have less insecticide sitting there for that for control of the rootworms. In terms of how you scout for them, that's what stinks. You know, it's easy for weeds. You go look in the field, hey, I got weeds, you go spray, done. With the rootworms, you literally have to dig up the roots, and you will find these little worms on the roots, and then you would know, oh, I had a rootworm issue, or I have a rootworm issue. Now, later in the season, you certainly can still do that, and there are root ratings. If you look on different universities' websites, whether it's Michigan State or Iowa State or University of Minnesota, whatever, they'll have root ratings that you can see, and they'll show pictures of the different levels, basically 1 through 5, in terms of how bad these roots look and how much feeding you had earlier in the season. But yeah, usually when we get calls, it's July or August, a big wind's come through, guys had lodging problems, and then we go out there, we dig the plant up, look at the roots, and we go, oh, look at this. You got tremendous amounts of feeding right here. It was bad. Next time you plant corn here, you really need to use an insecticide and a BT product and solve this issue. So that's kind of your run through on the whole thing. I wish there was some easy way to scout. I wish there was some easy way to identify where we're most likely going to have the problem, but it just doesn't work that way. So what people have typically done in the past is said, hey, if I'm raising continuous corn, I know I'm going to have more issue because these bugs don't move far. But the problem is we've got Western corn rootworms that have figured out a way around this. They will more predominantly lay eggs in soybean fields now. And then we've got the northern rootworms that can have what's called delayed diapause. So it's 2 years before they hatch, or 2 seasons basically. So if you plant beans next year, they still aren't hatching. The eggs hatch the very next year. Now, you think about this. It's not that these things were that smart or anything else. It's just the natural selection, where the ones that lived were obviously the ones that got put in the right spot, and then they continue going that way. So a rootworm, it only has a couple of days, and it's got to find a root to feed on, whether that's corn root or there's certain grass species, for example, that can serve as good food. If they don't find that root within 48 hours, they're dead, maybe 72 hours. I don't remember what the exact number is, but the point is there has to be something there. So one of the problems, like in soybean fields that we complain to people about all the time, a lot of farmers tell Darren and me, we're agronomists, and we're working with farmers every day, and they will say, look, I don't want to spray the volunteer corn herbicide with my first pass around, but I want to do it on my second pass, and I do that around the 4th of July. And I go, well, that's nice, but number one, you've already lost yield because of the volunteer corn, and number two, now you just hosted that rootworm for another whole year. And I very often, both Darren and I will be out in cornfields, or in soybean fields, I should say, and we'll be like, okay, let me show you. We'll pull up a volunteer corn plant, and there are rootworms feeding on that volunteer corn plant right there. And the guy's like, oh, yeah. I didn't realize that. Yes, that's one of the reasons you got to kill your volunteer corn early. It only costs $2 to kill it. Just kill it early, and that's going to help break that cycle. So there you go.
Wow, you're an yes, thank you, thank you. Okay,
you bet.
Last question, real
okay.
quick.
Yep.
And this is very elementary, but what is lodging and what?
The corn.
Comes out of the ground as you're trying to harvest it. It literally comes out of the ground
okay.
and won't let the machine harvest it.
Yep. No, lodging is basically just the plants tipping over. The plant's tipping, it's falling over, and people will blame the wind and they'll blame the hybrid, but usually the problem is either rootworm or compaction, poor drainage, or fertility. So it's all things within the farmer's control, but usually we as farmers like to blame Mother Nature and we blame the seed corn company, and it's neither of their faults. So that's lodging, and no, it can be a problem at harvest, but it usually isn't all that big a deal.
Thank you. Love your show.
You bet. Thanks, Dale.
All right, Brian. I got a question here. It's from Isaac. He said, what your formula used to calculate what plant population to put out there for corn? He said, I'm just wondering if that has gone under scholastic review or how you've come up with that formula.
Okay, so I think what he's talking about is very often we'll say, 7-to-1 or 10-to-1 kind of ratio. In other words, if you figure 10-to-1, for example, what we're after here is, let's say you plant 30,000 plants, so that means we have 30. You multiply that number times 10, that's 300 bushel corn. We multiply that times 7, that's 210 bushel corn. So a lot of times we'll say, hey, if you're planting 30,000 population, you should probably be in that 210 to 300 bushel range, just as a rough figure. Otherwise, population probably isn't your problem. If you're getting 150 bushel corn, it's probably not because you don't have enough population out there. It's probably something else going on. And then, obviously, you got to figure out what that is.
Yeah, like
has there been scholastic review on that? No. The problem with scholastic review on stuff is it takes 10 years a lot of times.
Well, and so, the hybrids change all the time, too. And
yep.
What Brian talked about, just taking, we're taking one-acre soil grids, and then we look at our yield monitor, and we see every 1 acre what the yield was in those spots. And you could do the same thing with your planting population if you vary population to see how your yield monitor data matches up.
Okay. We also had a caller call in, and he just asked this question a minute ago from Ontario. How do you apply fertility in a floodplain and not lose it? Well, we have ground in a floodplain also, and we worry about it all the time. What I worry about is not losing, let's say, phosphorus or zinc or copper, things that really attach themselves very well to soil, even if there's water there. What I worry more about is nitrate, sulfate, boron. And then I also obviously worry about losing the soil. So if I don't lose the soil, then the nutrients that don't move well in soil, like phosphorus, zinc, copper, like I was listing, they're going to stick around. You're in good shape. But what you do have to be careful of, and where you really want to spoon feed, is all those leachable nutrients. So that's typically what we do in our floodplain ground. We never put anything on the fall. We only start in the spring, and then we just put a little on at a time to get us by for a little while. Obviously, it changes depending on if it's a bad flood year or not, but that's our recommendation.
And the great thing with grass hay, multiple crops per year, you can just put on multiple doses, little doses as you go. Thanks for that question, and thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.